America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey everybody, welcome to The Big Ticket, Variety and iHeart's weekly podcast. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. On the show today, Joshua Jackson. The actor stops by The Big Ticket. Well, it was done via Zoom because of the upside-down world we are living in right now. To talk about his latest series, Little Fires Everywhere, with Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington. It's a crazy time for Jackson. He's not only busy promoting the Hulu series, but his brother is an ER doctor in New York City, and Jackson's wife, Queen and Slim star Jodie Turner-Smith, is about to give birth to their first child. The good news, Jackson's spirits are up, and he was down for chatting. We talked about working with Reese and Kerry, filming and seeing that now legendary scene in his Tidy Whiteys, and his thoughts on America's newest obsession, Tiger King. I'll be right back with Joshua Jackson. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Here's Little Fires Everywhere star Joshua Jackson.
Hey,
what's up?
How you doing? How are you doing, honestly?
You know, it's weird. You know, I'm about to get on a Zoom thing with Joshua Jackson. I'm telling my husband, shut the music. He has the rumba going. So the dogs are barking at the rumba. I'm like, no, don't clean now. But it's just
yeah. I cannot promise that the dogs will not be barking at a squirrel in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, no, my dogs will probably be barking at something. I just feel bad for the dogs. Like when we go back to so-called normal, what's going to happen? The dogs are going to have major separation anxiety.
Yeah. They're like, this pandemic thing works really well for us. You guys are home all the time.
So Joshua Jackson, how are you?
I'm good. I mean, like you, I'm just figuring this thing out on a day by day. Obviously, we have the complication of just about to have a baby.
Yeah.
So that adds a little bit of sauce to my days. But in general, you know, my wife's healthy, my baby's healthy, so I'm healthy. Life is good.
How do you even comprehend all of this, or do you sort of just take it a day by day?
Well, you have to plan out. So you know, any interaction with medical professionals right now is a little bit scary,
right?
Because you know, they've been hung out to dry and they're doing everything that they can to provide us with health and safety, but they're not really being given what they need to provide for their own health and safety.
Wow.
So there's definitely quite a bit of extra planning around that. But at the end of the day, you know, we're in a major, it's just trust, because we can't get anybody tested. Right. And so since you can't test anybody, you can't know.
Right.
So it's like, if you've been in or around an emergency room, you can't come in the house. If you have been interacting with other people in the last 14 days, you can't come in the house. So it's, it definitely adds a layer of angst. But I think from what I'm told, being a new parent is just angsty anyway. So I think this is just the way it is.
And I have a feeling, you know what? If coronavirus even comes near you guys, I just feel like Jody would kick its ass. Like,
I totally agree with that.
Do not mess with Jody.
No, there's no part. And she's militant about, like, she's been great in this, and also keeping her spirits high. But yeah, like we're at the place where we're, you know, if a package comes to the house, the package gets wiped down entirely before it gets in the house. So I have confidence. I am a firm believer that everything's going to be okay. I think we're going to be fine.
And your brother's an ER doctor?
Yeah.
Whoa.
In New York.
Wow.
So he's really at the front lines, and that's sort of where, you know, in the times where I can get him on the phone, that's where I'm really getting my information about, you know, what's possible and how severe things really are. And the answer is extremely severe.
So your family is just under like this weird stress of, you got you're having a baby in this, you got your brother in New York of all places.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the New York press system, like he's right at the front lines. And they don't have anything, you know. He's like, we don't have masks, we don't have gowns, we don't have gloves. Well, I mean, they do, but they're right. running out, and they're at the place that Italy was in 2 weeks ago of choosing who gets ventilators, who doesn't.
Wow.
They, you know, don't even have space for bodies.
Yeah, my husband and I the other day, West Hollywood City Council was doing like sort of a, you know, health workers drive for if you have any supplies that they could use. And my husband's a hair colorist, so we have a lot of gloves.
Gloves, wow.
Yeah, so, you know, we took a couple of boxes of gloves. And then when this all first started, he ordered something off Amazon that literally looks like stormtrooper helmets, like some kind of face shield thing. And I was like, babe, we're not going to use these. I don't know if the healthcare workers could use them. They look like they would protect them. So you had to like drive to a park. Don't roll down your windows, pop your trunk, they take the supplies out, they close your trunk, and you drive away.
And you go away, yeah.
And I got emotional. I started crying a little bit. I'm like, what is this world? Like, it was like Handmaid's Tale stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, and the, you know, the total failure in leadership at the top has not made anything easier. But
right.
I think we all need to be prepared for this being the new normal for at least, you know, the next 5, 6, 7, 8 months. Right. This is not a 2 week issue, you know?
Yeah. So in the craziness of all this, work still goes on.
Yeah.
You have this great series on Hulu, Little Fires Everywhere.
Yeah.
I have to be careful because I've watched all 7 episodes and still waiting for the finale.
Okay.
So I know a lot and I've never read the book. Yeah, I'm ahead. I've never read the book, so I don't know who set the fires. But did you read the book beforehand? Did you know about the book at all?
I only read the book when I got brought into the process. So, which would be May or June of last year. May of last year. So they sent me the first 7 scripts, which is amazing that they had. They actually had the first 8, but until I signed on the dotted line, they wouldn't give me 8. So they sent me the first 7 scripts. I thought the scripts were really compelling. Then I went back and read the book because I wanted to see where the Bill character was in the book. And the Bill character doesn't really exist much in the book. I mean, he's there, but he's not of central focus. And that was actually that was the first thing that I said to Reese Carey and to Liz was like, you know, as an audience member, as a person who reads a lot of scripts, it's amazing to read a script and a whole narrative arc that's completely from the female perspective, right? Mm-hmm. You have the kid storyline and you have these 2 women storyline, and this show is truly told through the woman's eyes,
right.
And that's a breath of fresh air, frankly. But that given that that's the case, I don't actually think that this Bill character is fleshed out enough. I don't see an actual man in here. I see sort of brush strokes of a man. And to their credit, all 3 of them took that as constructive criticism and said, yeah, well, you know, that's true. We have focused really heavily on getting these women right and making their narratives and the kids' narratives and those dynamics make sense. And we haven't had, you know, a man in the room and we haven't really put our focus there. So they were really open and receptive to, and it was teeny tiny things. Like, right. You know, it wasn't whole page 1 rewrite.
Right.
It was just little minor additions also to take into account the power dynamic inside of a family in the 1990s, right? Right. So meaning that those people weren't of the 1990s, they're actually of the 1970s.
Right.
And Elena being this powerhouse character that she is, which still have to work with inside the confines of a very, you know, patriarchal, male dominated place where she could have, you know, her nice side job.
Right.
It kept her busy, but he was still the boss in that house. So just taking things like that into account and that was it. And then we were away to the races.
Yeah. So Bill, I mean, he just does not stand up to Elena, does he?
No. Well, I think the deal that he's made, I guess I'm kind of in this place right now. I'm really fascinated by like dissipated manhood. Mm-hmm. Cause I feel like Cole was kind of that in the affair.
Mm-hmm.
He's a much more butch character. But at the end of the day, he's a man, you know, grappling with loss and his own, lack of sense of purpose in life, right? He funnels all of that energy into his wife. Well, Bill did kind of the same thing, but in the opposite direction, right? He made this unspoken deal with his wife at some point in the way, way back history of this show. And the deal was like, I want to be with this woman, and I don't really have it in me to be the maverick that I thought I would be, the public defender that's going to go out and change the world. So I'll do all the right things, and I'll get the picket fence, and I'll have the, you know, all the like cute, well-polished kids. And I guess that's a successful life. And to me, that I see that. I understand that. I think lots and lots of people make that deal with themselves. Mm-hmm. And then you end up in some degree of misery. And at some point in your life, that rattles apart, right? Yes. The husband and the wife, the partners don't really speak to each other about anything real. They're just going through the motions. And I think for Bill, you know, he really doesn't want to deal with anything inside that house. Right? So
yeah,
everything that is like kids and home and Elena, he's just like, yeah, whatever. Just
I'm going to be in my office.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a lot of scotch in the office nights for Bill.
How did I get here? There's a part of him I feel like he's just given up. He's just like, totally. It is what it is.
He's thrown his hands up. He's like, I did my bit. You know, I got the right job. I did the right thing. And he has ceased wanting to be engaged in the fight,
right,
with his own life. I mean, he has literally given up on his own life. And I find that fascinating, not only because I can see how it happens. You know, there's been times in my life where I'm like, well, I guess this is just what it is.
Right.
And you just, you know, you're like, this is what they say. Like, you put your nose to the grindstone and you just keep on going. All those kind of terrible pieces of advice that we get that increase your misery.
But the scene that seems to be getting a lot of attention from the public and your wife, those tidy whiteys, dude.
The tidy whiteys heard around the world. So little did I know that in 30 years, all I really needed to do was get into some like ugly dad underwear and this is what people have really been waiting for.
I've never heard the phrase dad underwear.
Literally, when we were doing, so the wardrobe supervisor, or the costume designer, rather, is a woman named Lynn Paolo. And, you know, we were doing this and she's like, do you want to do sweats? Do you want to do, I was like, no, this is like a middle-aged dad who's given up. I want, you know, ill-fitting, tidy whiteys. He grew up in the 70s. He's exactly that guy. And an undershirt, like he is, that's, you know, him. From those like archetype movies of the 50s and 60s, yeah. That's who he would have grown up thinking were super cool guys, right? And so we shot the first scene, and then there's another scene in the bedroom later on in that first episode. And if you are paying close attention, you'll notice that I'm wearing boxers in that scene. Cause after we shot the first one, the ladies came to me, particularly Lynn, the director, and was like, you know, I just don't know about the tidy whiteys. It's a little bit too much. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, he's a guy. He's like sort of giving up on life. And she was like, yeah, but it just made me boxes for this. And I wasn't watching the footage, so I didn't know what she was talking about. But when I saw the episode, I was like, oh, yeah, there's a lot of me in that movie.
And I love that Jody's like, someone has to have a gif of this. Where are the gifs? And like within seconds.
Yeah. So yeah, Jody's very happy for the world to know what she's working with.
And that's why she's love you guys as a couple.
Yeah. She's not smiling all the time because I'm funny. You know?
Wow.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, Jackson reveals how he really feels when young people tell him their moms were big fans of Dawson's Creek. Plus, Jackson weighs in on Tiger King. I'll be right back.
Okay, let's go.
So we're supposed to be sticking to the script, but we ain't, because that's just not what we do. It's your girl Tam Bam, y'all.
And it's AJ Hey. And we're giving a whole bunch of good, bad advice. And a lot of bad, great advice. We're trying to teach you how to say when, how, and how much, y'all. Uh-huh.
Yes, sir. Now, that doesn't always have to apply to your sex life, ladies. It can absolutely apply to your career. Unless your sex life is your career, then it's interchangeable.
We're talking about a whole lot of sex.
I love the sex.
Hey, and a bunch of money.
I love the money.
And relationships.
We're going to work on that.
So listen to our new show, We Talk Back, every Thursday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Here's more of Little Fires Everywhere star Joshua Jackson.
The themes, obviously, like you said, you know, these are people who grew up in the 70s. But the themes are so now. I mean, if you didn't, there was even parts where I was like, wait a minute, what year is it?
Right.
There are moments you sort of forget, and you're even looking at Elena going, she could be a mom in the 90s who's still a little stuck in her old ways of dressing, because, you know, the shoulder pads and the dynasty kind of outfits. But the themes are there. But Mia wasn't necessarily black in the book, from what So it just, I keep trying to imagine her as white. I'm like, oh, how would it work? Would it just be like single white female?
Right. Well, if she's just white, you're only tackling the issues of class, right?
Right.
There's a whole story there, right? So there's plenty of juicy and meaty things there. But as soon as the Mia character becomes black, and then obviously by extension her child becomes black, you bring in the race and class, and then the intersection of race and class, right? And it just makes the whole story, I think, incredibly richer. And by having it set in the 90s and introducing the idea of race into it, or more centrally into it, what you also do is, because we've learned the language around microaggressions, if you set this in 2020, right, a lot of the ways in which the kids, and as all children are, who are just reflections of the things they hear in their home, who are just reflections of their parents, all those cringeworthy moments, I had one in episode four, which I guess would be last week's episode. Where Bill's in the process, he's at the dinner table and he's, you know, up in arms about this Chinese person. And you know, that's not the word he's looking for, right? But like all of those things that are cringeworthy to us in 2020, but all we've done is like learn the language around how not to be cringeworthy. We actually haven't really changed the behavior patterns very much. So I think by putting it just that little bit in the past, you give license to really look at these things in a more frank manner, because they couldn't, you know, it could not be more topical than what we were all going through up until 2 weeks ago, and then the world changed.
Yeah, because it's even when especially Elena Reese, she says a couple of things, and you just cringe, and you're like, that's so awful, as if that's not happening now.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. It's like, you know, we always want to give ourselves credit, particularly as white people. Yeah. We want to give ourselves credit for being farther along culturally than we are. Right.
Yeah.
And so there's that brilliant scene between Reese and Carrie where Reese's character is offering her the house manager job, you know, and Mia very rightly is like, you want me to be your maid? And as an audience member, you're just like, but if you walked into most homes in Los Angeles and looked at the who's hiring and who's doing the work, that dynamic exists. I think these two women are brilliant, and the women around them are brilliant, and they understood what they could achieve by choosing to tell a story that's set in that time, because it allows you the ability to make the characters a little bit out of pocket, while still talking about the things that are of concern to us today.
So now, did the young kids on set even know what Cruel Intentions was?
I don't think. Yeah, I mean, I'm in this phase of my career where, you know, anybody under 30 really, but you know, all these kids were like 18 and below. Well, I think Jade was 19. I can't remember exactly, but all kids. They were like, yeah, I think I've heard of Dawson's Creek. I think that was my mom really liked that show. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
How wild is that? Because I have to tell you, I don't think I've ever even told you this. So when Dawson's Creek started, I was the entertainment editor for a magazine called Twist. It was a teen magazine, sort of like, you know, like Tiger Beat kind of thing. And I remember WB, right? It was on the WB?
Yeah.
So WB publicist calls me and says, we're shooting the prom scene of Dawson's Creek, but you guys hadn't been on the air yet. They said, do you want to come? And, you know, you can photo it, you interview everyone. My editor-in-chief was like, nah, we don't know if that show is going to be big. We didn't go and have a set visit for the prom scene at Dawson's Creek. And that's obviously stayed with me for a very long time.
You've been carrying this for 20 years. Let it go, man.
You know what? I use it now when I'll like bring, you know, up a new, you know, a new actor or a new show. And I'm like, listen, it could be my Dawson's Creek. Right. Let's just, you know.
Because you never know. I mean, Lord, we had no idea when we were shooting that thing.
No. Nope.
What we were about to do.
And then, I mean, talking about nostalgia, Mighty Ducks. Will we see Charlie on the Disney Plus show?
I don't think you'll see Charlie on the Disney Plus show. But I do know I wonder if they were actually able to finish their production.
Yeah.
I know that they were shooting up in Vancouver. And I don't know if they were able to get to wrap. But I do know that it is getting done, which I think is great. It's, you know, and as it should be, it's the next generation of kids, right, which I think is exactly right.
Is it wild when you see things like what you said, like their parents watched Dawson's Creek, Mighty Ducks is going to be this whole new generation, which means they're going to watch your movies and they're going to get to know Joshua Jackson there.
So here's like the weird thing about surviving for as long as I had. One is, the like cycle of generations. Right. But two, because everything is current always now, those Mighty Ducks movies, like I'm always surprised when a, you know, a 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 year old would be like, hey, Charlie. Because we kind of don't make really kids movies like that anymore, right? No. It's either a TV show or it's an animated show, but there isn't really like a directly for young teens and below.
Like the Bad News Bears.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff just went away. And then I would say probably like 6 or 7 years ago, my friend's kids started being like, hey man, I watched your show. I'm like, what, Fringe? Like, no, I'm watching Dawson's Creek again. I'm like, what? And I guess one of the streamers picked it up and it just became a new generation's, like, I don't even understand how at 17 now you would relate to anything that's going on in that like we're in a pre-social media, pre-cell phone.
Right.
Like, it must seem from the Stone Age if you're 17 right now.
It's,
I guess, like,
it's called vintage.
Vintage, exactly. I'm a vintage actor.
You're from old Hollywood.
Old Hollywood, exactly. Let me tell you how it was, kid.
So what are you binging right now? I know I said you guys have been watching Tiger King.
Oh, we finished it last night.
And?
Have you watched any of this?
The entire thing. We binged it the first weekend of the pandemic.
I cannot wrap my head around basically anything in that show. Like, one, that man and that woman exist, and that there is a subculture of people who have giant, ferocious, man-eating animals as their house pets. Two, that there is such a thing as a gay libertarian cowboy meth head
libertarian
animal.
libertarian
yeah.
Meth head cowboy, like, gunslinging
polyamorous with always kind of like hot young guys.
You
know what I mean?
You did not. No.
Oh, seriously, like,
dude, did you see Joe? He has no teeth.
I mean, meth is a powerful drug, my friend. But when Joe started out, he was a handsome young fella. Which makes me think that the talent pool in Oklahoma is pretty, pretty shallow. Because if you're an 18-year-old gay man and Joe Exotic is, you're like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there's got to be a better way. Like, go to Texas. I don't know. Just get in a car and drive west, young man.
Oh, my God. You're killing me.
You end up
now
in a much better place. That's the wildest. And also, you know, the like, that woman killed her husband. Is what we're supposed
to do. You think
I mean, she's pretty gleeful about when they're interviewing her, and she's like, and then they think I put him under the septic tank. Like,
meat grinder? How could a hand fit in the meat grinder?
Exactly. Well, madam, you would only know that if you tried. Like, you would only know that if you were standing in front of the meat grinder being like, damn it, I can't get the whole hand in there. You know, it's just like everything about that show was mind-boggling to me.
Mr. Jackson, you're amazing. Go have a healthy baby.
Thank you. We will.
Tell Jody I said hi.
Will do.
Her Twitter is just, it's killing me.
Me. This is the difference between us and our 8-year age gap. It's like the total social media savviness. Mm-hmm. And she's pretty hilarious on there at the best of times. But now that we have nothing but time on our hands, the world had better watch out. Like, do not cross my wife on Twitter.
I'm telling you, forget about Dr. Fauci, Jody Turner Smith in charge of coronavirus. That thing would be done.
Done. Done. Honestly, she'd have it wrapped up by this weekend.
I know. Well, Mr. Jackson, thank you again. Hopefully next time I'll see you in person and not.
Yes. You know what I can't wait for? World. I can't wait to see you in person and be able to give you a hug.
Oh, thank you. Same here.
You know what I mean? I cannot wait until we can get past this moment in time.
That was Joshua Jackson. Little Fires Everywhere is available on Hulu. Coming up next week, actor and LGBTQ Hollywood trailblazer Wilson Cruz. For now, don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mark Malkin. For the latest entertainment news, head over to Variety.com. Be well and be safe. See you next time.